jockphobic bucket, Taylor.
And I'm researching magic powers in study hall, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. This week, for our return into the world of podcasting in the new year, in this glorious year of 2023, we watched Carrie 2013, directed by Kimberly Pierce, starring Chloe Grace Moretz, Julianne Moore, Judy Greer, Gabrielle Wilde, Ansel Elgort, Boo, We Hate Your Pussy, and Portia Doubleday, based on the novel by Stephen King. An extremely unfairly maligned movie. I'll say it.
Nobody understands this movie like we do, because we know that it's good.
My hot takes are abundant about this movie.
So are mine. I'm so glad. When you told me that you wanted to do Carrie, but specifically this version, I was like, fuck yes. Like, I'm in it. Let's do this. Nobody understands this movie, but we do.
No one gets it. I will say, hey, Taylor, we have a lot of trigger warnings for this one.
Yeah, let's get those out of the way before our discussion.
Let's just fucking list them off. We are looking at bullying, child abuse, religious trauma and iconography, violence within a school setting, harm against children and a baby, menstruation, a couple of scenes of self-harm, and a brief mention of rape. So,
yeah.
Oh boy,
there's a lot going on in this one.
There's so much happening in this. In every adaptation, every version of this story, there's just so much happening all the time.
Yeah. It is really funny that you chose this too, because I had just watched the Brian De Palma one, just because I kind of felt like watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So that one is fresh in my mind enough that watching this movie now, like, I haven't seen this movie in, like, years and years, and I, like, it's just so good. It's great.
So should I kind of want to get into, like, my memories with Carrie as a story, because it ended up being, like, quite an influence in my life for a long time.
Oh, please, go for it.
So, I think a lot of horror people have the same experience with starting to read Stephen King, in that you had this moment in high school where you're like, no one can stop me from reading Stephen King.
Yeah, I had that experience.
Right? Like, I was in the school library and we had like a shelf of Stephen King books, and I was like, I could just read one of these. Like, no one's gonna stop me. Who's gonna fucking stop me? They're here for everyone to read. And I had read a little bit of, I believe, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, which didn't super stick with me. But I did read a little bit of it.
I will say, horrific book.
I only read like the first couple of chapters, so.
Absolutely fucking horrific book.
And I picked Carrie probably, I think, just because it was short. And I sort of like knew the cultural idea of Carrie. You know, I think pretty much everyone above a certain age bracket is like, yeah, Carrie, it's about the girl with telekinesis who goes crazy at prom. And it was written, you know, back when Stephen King had an editor.
Yeah. It was his first novel.
It was.
Which is wild.
Yeah, insane. Like, damn, Stephen, coming in hot.
Like there was a time before he was capital S, capital K, Stephen King. Like,
yeah.
He was just like, I wrote this book called Carrie.
And I picked it up from the school library and I read it and I was just like fascinated. I had never really read a book that was like for grown-ups before. Like, I had never read a book that like discussed things like sex and menstruation so candidly and like went into these like darker, like completely horrific themes and ideas, and I was just like morbidly transfixed by the whole thing. And it started me off reading, like, all the Stephen King books that my school had. And, you know, here's the thing. There is no demographic that Carrie, the story, hits more with than, like, autistic teenage girls. And, like, I was never bullied as badly as Carrie, which probably isn't saying much because it's a little, even in like the book, it's a little bit much. But I had been like the subject of enough of it that I was like, oh, I have been here. I've been on the receiving end of like asking someone out as a joke or something like that. Like, you know, and I just was like, oh my God, she's just like me for real. So yeah, that was, and then a few years down the line, my brother, before he transitioned, was cast as Carrie in Carrie the Musical, and it's just been like in my life for a long time, and I'm very attached to it. I love this fucking story. Also, this movie, I saw it in theaters with Jamie. And I actually remember we were waiting for the callback phone calls, and we were watching this movie, and like right in the middle of it, they called and were like, hey, guess what, Jamie, you're Carrie. So,
based. Yeah.
That's based. My memories with this movie and with Carrie as a story.
One of the scariest things to me is the fact that my trajectory with this story is basically the exact same as yours.
God damn
up
it.
Up to and including the fact that we both have younger siblings who played Carrie. Because my younger sister also played Carrie in Carrie the Musical. And I also found this book in the school library when I was a freshman in high school. And I fucking blew through it and then immediately started reading all of the other Stephen King books that my library had. And but the difference for me is,
oh God,
this movie came out my freshman year of high school, a mere few months after I read the book.
Oh my God. And we were talking about this last night. So it came out when Taylor was a freshman. This movie came out when I was 1 year out of high school. Like I graduated.
I always forget that we are 5 years apart in age.
I was class of 2012. Like like this movie came out the year after I graduated. Like when you told me that last night, I was like, I have never felt the age gap between us like I do in this moment. And I don't think I ever will.
And I remember I read this book, and then I think I read like Salem's Lot and then like The Shining and then like a few other ones. But it was like a few months after I had read Carrie that this movie came out, and I went and saw it with my best friend from high school. And I just remember loving this movie when I saw it in theaters. Like, I adored this movie. And I didn't really, because I was kind of online, but I wasn't really online in the way of, like, being exposed to everyone's opinions all the time, you know?
Right.
Twitter was not quite so ubiquitous at that point. I just kind of knew, like, I saw this movie and I liked it, and it was not until, like, a few years later that I found out that the prevailing opinion on this movie is not just, like, it's a mid-remake, but, like, this is atrocious shit garbage.
I had the same exact experience. I was like, wait, we hate this movie? Yeah. Why? Like, why? It's not...
I never understood it.
If, like, listen, if anything, the worst thing you can say about this is that it's, like, a mid-remake. Like, I can see where people could see that, right? Like, I understand, like, if you're really attached to the De Palma version and you see this, I can understand, like, thinking it's a mid-remake. But, like, actively thinking it's, like, atrocious, disgusting garbage is insane.
Yeah, the level of vitriol that people have towards this movie has always baffled me. I've never understood it. Like, I can understand not liking it, but, like, people act like this movie murdered their mother. Like, people fucking hate this movie. And I don't get it. I don't understand the hatred.
There are so many worse remakes of things than this.
We just watched Black Christmas 2006, which update, guys, by the way, if you don't follow either of us on Letterboxd, after last episode where we were like hesitantly positive about the Black Christmas 2006 remake, we watched it. It's really, really awful.
It's bad. It's bad,
it's
guys.
Very bad. So, oh, God. But more people like that movie than seem to like this movie.
Which is insane.
It's bonkers to me.
Like, I think the worst thing you could say about this movie is, like, the CGI is not great. It hasn't aged
well. No, the CGI
is
not very good at all. It's just, like, 2013 CGI.
And also, like, it just, you could make the argument that it doesn't really add anything, but I don't even think that's correct.
No, I don't think that's true. So when I was going through the Letterboxd reviews, like the prevailing thread in the negative reviews of this movie just seemed to be, it's a shot-for-shot remake that doesn't add anything, which I don't know what movie you watched, but that's just patently not true.
My favorite argument is that, like, Chloe Grace Moretz isn't, like, it's too pretty to play Carrie. And I'm like, I'm sorry, Sissy Spacek wasn't.
Also, not for nothing, I'm not trying to say anything about the people who say this, but she was, like, 15 when they filmed this. And I was 15 the first time I saw this movie. And now I'm 24, and I'm like, she looks like a child.
Yeah.
Like, she's a cute kid. She's a child. She's a child.
And, like, listen, her acting, potent weird girl energy.
Her acting is so good. Also, a lot of the reviews were shitting on her acting, and I was like,
again, what are you talking about? Hello, that last scene? Okay. Before we get into discussion, I feel weird. Like, do I have to describe the plot of Carrie to you? Like,
yeah.
I know I should just to keep with regulation, but it feels weird. I feel like if you're listening to a horror podcast and you don't know just the basic plot of Carrie, something might be wrong. Like, please go watch even just the De Palma version or this version. Like, fix that.
Or fix yourself. The book.
Or read the book.
The book rules. Book's very good.
Fix yourself. Anyway.
Fix your life.
Fix your life. Let me, I guess I'll do it though. Like, yeah. Just to keep with the format. High school can be tough for many teenagers, but for Carrie White, it's especially hellish. A shy and awkward teen raised by a religious zealot, Carrie is frequently the target of bullies. But Carrie has a secret talent. She can make things move with her mind. One fateful night, an especially cruel prank at her senior prom pushes her over the edge, and Carrie unleashes her telekinetic powers on all who get in her way. Yeah, it's Carrie.
It's Carrie.
It's Carrie. Can I drop?
Yeah, Carrie. We've all seen it.
We've all seen it. I feel like I should drop my hottest take at the top. I feel like
Want you to drop it right away because I don't know what you're about to say. I'm very excited. Go for it.
I like this version better than the De Palma version.
Ooh.
And I can't explain myself. I can't, like, I don't hate the De Palma version by any stretch of the means. I just vibe with this one more. I can't explain it. I can't defend myself. I don't want to defend myself, and I shouldn't have to. I enjoy this version more, and if you don't like that, come fight me in a parking lot.
I will counter that with my, I guess, simultaneous hot take, which, while not as controversial as yours, I guess is, like, similarly controversial. I think that this movie and the De Palma movie succeed and fail at two different things.
Okay.
So my hot take, De Palma movie, high on style and aesthetics and filmmaking, low on story and character. This mm-hmm. movie, really high on story, character, low on aesthetics.
I can definitely agree with that. I think De Palma definitely brings more of a directorial style to this than Kimberly Pierce did.
Which makes sense because De Palma is a very visual mm-hmm. director. I mean, we reviewed Sisters. We know he's very kind of flourishy with his directing style, and he does a lot of cool shit with the camera.
Yes.
And when people talk about the original Carrie, a lot of it is talking about the use of split screen and the filmmaking techniques that he used. But, hot take, I don't find the script or his treatment, not his, because it's not really De Palma. There were other screenwriters and other people involved with mm-hmm. the movie. But, like, I don't find that movie's treatment of the characters to be particularly deep or insightful or interesting.
You know what? I agree. And I think that actually might be part of why I prefer this movie. Because while I like stylistic directorial things when they happen, I tend to connect more with movies that have really strong character stuff.
Yeah.
Like, strong scripts, strong character stuff. Directorial style is great. I like it. I think it's incredible when directors are allowed to just do whatever the fuck they want with things. But it's not necessarily something that I connect with on a level of like engaging with film.
Yeah. And having just watched the De Palma one, I was kind of surprised at how shallow the script was. And I think that the reason that the original Carrie sticks in pop culture as much as it does is because it is so visually interesting and the filmmaking is so beautiful. And the, like, aesthetically, it's a gorgeous movie.
Oh, yeah.
This movie, I think, is a lot better, despite being a lot less visually interesting and a lot more conventionally shot, because Kimberly Pierce is more interested in the story and the characters than making interesting artistic and directorial choices.
So basically, if you took the De Palma version and this version and, like, mixed them in a pot, you would have the perfect Carrie.
Yeah, if visually you had all of the, like, weird cracked out 70s vibes of the original, but with the depth of character and the interest in the characters as human beings that this movie has, I think you would have the perfect adaptation of Carrie. Hot fucking take. So to me, these two movies rank equally in my book because they succeed and fail in my mind at two completely different things. And I think whichever one you prefer is really down to whether you are watching Carrie more for this is a really cool, interesting movie to look at and watch, as opposed to, like, this is a really cool, interesting movie on a screenwriting level.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I was rambling for too long, but that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it.
That makes a lot of sense. You know what I found was really interesting about, like, the way that this movie was made? I'm pretty sure that originally this movie was supposed to be either, like, partially or completely found footage.
Which, I didn't know that.
Which sounds terrible when you think about it at first, but with the way that the original story is told, in the book it's done in a very, like, is the word Episcopal?
Epistolary.
There we go. Episcopal. That's fucking Episcopal. I can't talk.
I don't know if that's Margaret White's denomination. I don't know if she has a denomination.
Her denomination is insane.
No. Her denomination is insane person.
Is crazy person. Anyway. Episcopal. Oh my God.
I'm not cutting that, by the way.
I know you're not. I was just going to say, I can't believe that's going out into the world. Anyway.
Episcopalian.
Yeah. No, but it's written in that style of, like, clippings from books and from newspapers and different formats. And then there are also, like, just straight narrative parts. And I think in the right hands, the found footage style could have been really interesting in the way that I think, like, a found footage version of Dracula would be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could pull it off. I think you could do it.
I do understand why they didn't do it, though, because I think by 2013, the whole found footage thing had already become kind of a pop cultural joke.
Yeah, 2013 was the same year that The Conjuring came out.
Yeah.
Which is what switched everyone from, like, found footage to demon movies.
Yeah.
I mean,
so I feel like in 2013, the horror landscape was so, like, fatigued by found footage movie. I think they made the correct choice for the time.
Yeah,
to found not footage do it that way.
Found footage was on the outs, especially after it wasn't even like The Conjuring solidified it, but I think Insidious was the movie that, like, started to change people over to the sort of demonic possession wave that we saw, like, early to mid 2010s.
Yeah, like we're doing ghosts and demons now, actually.
Once again, we almost say thank you, James Wan, for that one.
Thank you, James Wan.
This king keeps on, like, changing the face of horror.
This king stays, the crown stays on the king's head.
Truly. I also think that he has done it again, considering Malignant and Megan recently. Which, by the way, please go see Megan. It's such a good time.
I need to see it.
It's so good.
It's so campy and fun.
It's so campy and it's very Malignant.
Oh. Love that. I love that James Wan is just doing whatever he wants now.
Yeah.
He just gets to slay, and we all just get to enjoy the fruits of that labor. Anyway, Carrie.
Back to Carrie.
Chloe Moretz is so fucking good in this movie. I'm gonna be vulnerable here for a second. Live on mic, I'm gonna be vulnerable. I don't know if it's because I just finished my period a few days ago, but I full on cried. At several points in this film.
First off, shut the fuck up. I'm finishing my period right now. I hate that we're synced.
Yeah. That's terrifying. Yet more evidence that we are the same person in two different fonts.
You're italics, I'm bold.
Yeah, exactly. But I literally, like, I was shocked at how emotional the scenes between Carrie and her mother genuinely made me.
That last scene with Carrie and Sue is, like, I honestly thought all of the, like, because I'm terrible at discerning ages. So I'm just like, oh, these are all just, like, girls in their early 20s being teenagers, right? No, she was 15 when she did that.
She had literally, Chloe Moretz was fucking, like, actually 15 years old. And she slays. And she's so good in this movie.
She fucking brings the house down, like, literally. Ha ha, get it.
Did you know she sewed, I think, two of the, not the prom dress, obviously. That was, like, the actual costume designer who did that. But she, Chloe Moretz, actually sewed two of the, like, school outfits that Carrie wears.
Seriously?
I think that, like, long jean skirt and the, like, the jean, like, not overall, but, like, the overdress that she wears with the checkered shirt underneath in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
I think she sewed those herself because Carrie sews her own clothes. That's, like, a thing, like, canonical thing. She sewed her own prom dress and stuff. So, like, Chloe Moretz actually sewed those things herself. She taught herself how to sew.
My God. And what have I done?
Literally, like,
what have I done?
This kid was 15 years old fucking committing to, like, no, I'm gonna do this. I'm doing this. And she slays. Like, I cannot emphasize enough how fucking good this is.
I think everyone tends to get lost in the idea that she's, like, too pretty to have been bullied. And I'm like, listen, that doesn't fucking matter. Like, it matters
on nothing. That completely misses the point of why Carrie White gets bullied.
Yeah. Like, yes, Carrie in the book is described as not being conventionally attractive, but, like,
but that's not the main reason why they fucking pick on her.
It's not, and it's not the reason why people get fucking picked on in real life. Pretty people can get fucking bullied too. It doesn't, like, being pretty doesn't mean you're safe. If people, like, fucking smell that othered shit on you, they will come for your throat, especially in fucking high school.
Literally. And, like, listen, Carrie, even if she's pretty, has all of the fucking ingredients to be, like, the perfect person for a school to descend upon as their, like, token bullying victim. She's got a weird family that they don't really understand. She's super religious. It's implied that she, at least at some point in the past, if not now, was, like, openly talking about how other kids were being sinful, quote unquote. Like, it's never shown in the movie, but it's said in the books that she used to, you know, say things to other kids like that.
Yeah, it's, and, implied, you know, she's, in the book, too.
She's weird and twitchy and awkward, and she doesn't know how to talk to people, and she has really no social skills. Of course she's gonna get fucking picked on.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I just feel like reducing it down to Chloe Moretz is too pretty to be a victim of bullying is so fucking reductive.
Absolutely.
And it just completely misses the point of the entire story of Carrie, in my opinion.
It's just a bad opinion. I'm sorry.
It is a bad opinion. And one thing that I found upon this rewatch that I had not really noticed before was how much more nuanced Margaret White is depicted in this movie, and more specifically, Margaret and Carrie's relationship. Their, like, actual text codependency is so real and raw in a way that other adaptations don't really ever seem to understand.
Yeah, I think the musical gets it right.
The musical does do it in a way that I find very similar to this movie.
I think a lot, like, very famously, Piper Laurie, who plays Margaret White in the original Carrie, did not know that she was in a horror movie and thought that she was in a comedy and played it that way, played Margaret White that way as a very, like, sort of one note. And not to say that Piper Laurie did a bad job. She's fucking terrifying in the De Palma version. But I think that's definitely a factor in why Julianne Moore's performance is a lot more nuanced and a lot more not sympathetic, but also like it makes Margaret more of a human, you know?
Yeah, I think that it's easy to kind of look at this character as is written in the script and understand her as this sort of one-dimensional monster.
And I'll say that's because Stephen King just fucking hates religious people, but...
That's true. Stephen King has a lot of problems with organized religion, and I get it, like...
Yeah, we understand.
I find Julianne Moore's interpretation of Margaret White to be really interesting, and the scenes with her and Carrie are heartbreaking in a way that I don't think that people... really are ready for when they watch Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I think this also is partially because the original Margaret White has been so like memeified.
Yeah.
Like the amount of drag queens I've seen who fucking quote and reference that they're all gonna laugh at you. Like It's funny. It's funny. Cause Piper Laurie is very over the top at times.
Yes.
It can get campy. So I think that this movie does the really important thing of bringing it down to, like, no, these are two human beings.
One of whom is deeply mentally ill.
Yeah.
Who have this, like, codependent relationship with each other. And I think also
in this version, you really understand why Carrie... despite everything that Margaret has done to her over the course of the story and beforehand, still genuinely loves her mother.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so heartbreaking.
It is too, just like this idea that for all that Margaret has done these horrible fucking things to her daughter on the daily basis, she's still also the only person who has ever showed Carrie any semblance of positive emotion, you know, who's ever showed her love, even if that love comes also from a place of like abuse, you know?
Yeah. There's a reason why abusers cut their victims off from other sources of positivity in their lives and other opportunities to make friends and have connections, because if the choice for an abuse victim is between somebody who alternates between I love you and I am abusing you versus people who always hate you all the time, they're going to choose the 50-50.
Exactly.
And that's Carrie's dilemma, is that, like, the kids at school hate her all the time and bully her all the time. Her mother sometimes is nice to her and sometimes abuses her.
Mm-hmm.
And for Carrie... she would rather have some love than none at all.
Exactly.
And it's just, Kimberly Pierce understands this mother-daughter dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So much does she understand this dynamic.
I will say, this is no tea, no shade to Brian De Palma, but I am very glad that we have a version of Carrie that is directed by a woman.
Thank God, honestly. Like, that was like, another thing that I could not... get out of my head when I was watching the De Palma version. I was like, oh man, a man directed this movie.
Like, no tea, no shade. There's still so much to love about the De Palma version, but boy, am I glad that we have another version that is directed by a woman.
Yep. And ironically, it's not really a problem that the book has.
No, I... And a lot of people. Which
is
surprising
because Stephen King is a dude.
Oh, Stephen King is a dude, and Stephen King loves to talk about knockers.
Okay, considering the amount of times that, like, boobs are, like, talked about in the book Carrie, it's shockingly, like, very... I don't know how to describe it. It feels very authentically about women.
Yeah, it does. And it's insane because Stephen King has picked up on this, like... dynamic of girls in high school where they're just like shitty to each other.
Yeah. I think also it helps that Stephen King, before he was Stephen King, his day job, he was a high school teacher.
Oh, yeah.
So yep. I think that a lot of the stuff in Carrie that still rings true and feels very real, and Stephen King has talked about this, it's because it's shit that he observed and witnessed and picked up on just being a fucking English teacher and being around teenagers all day.
One of my favorite, like, set stories that I came across for this movie, speaking of the boobies, Julianne Moore Julianne Moore and Chloe Moretz could not fucking handle the dirty pillows line. Like, they could not deliver it seriously. And I feel like that's such a, like, Stephen King-ism, where, like,
yeah.
I feel like on the page, reading, like, the one word, dirty pillows, you get, like, a sense of, like, ooh, that's, like, weird and, like...
It's a weird childish term that Margaret uses because she's so deeply fucked up and repressed.
Yeah, like, you get that sense when you read it on the page, but saying it out loud, I definitely understand why they couldn't take it seriously.
The idea of Julianne Moore, like, Oscar-winning actress Julianne Moore having to, like, say the words, "I can see your dirty pillows," is just very good.
And I feel like this is a thing that a lot of Stephen King adaptations have problems with. And I think we'll probably talk about this more when we do any episodes on, like, the It remakes.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen King is very difficult to adapt to screen because you have to know when to cut, like, the Stephen King of it all.
Yeah. See, another thing that I would say that I think kind of detracts from this movie somewhat is that I think that there is such a stark contrast between the dialogue that you can immediately tell is lifted straight from the book and the dialogue that is screenwriter original. Because mm-hmm. the dialogue that is screenwriter original content feels natural and the actors are able to deliver it in a way that sounds like, oh, this is how human beings talk. But then sometimes there is a line where you're like, that line was weird, and
I bet it's
that person didn't say that line in a way that sounded like a person, and you're like, oh, it's because it's an iconic bit from the book.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Stephen King dialogue is hard to say. I'm thinking specifically of the bit during the detention scene. Judy Greer really struggles to deliver some of Miss Desjardins' iconic kind of lines during that scene. I think when she says, "That was a shitty thing you did." Pause. Yeah. A really shitty thing. Like, something about that just doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the dialogue in this movie that isn't from the book is so snappy and natural sounding.
Yeah.
That the stuff from the book, it sticks out in a way that you clock it immediately. That's a small problem I have with this movie, but
it's just the Stephen King of it all.
Yeah.
Steve.
Ironically, I think this movie would have been better if they'd have just fucking cut those lines and just did their own thing.
Yeah, they didn't learn to do that until 2013. Or sorry, not 2013, 2017.
Yeah. because some of the stuff from the book, they, like, reformat in a way that is modern and current and sounds fine. And then you'll just get hit with a line where you're like, oh, dirty pillows, huh, Steve? Okay, we're still using that one? All right.
I feel like Carrie is kind of a difficult one to bring into the modern age for the simple fact that, like, back in the day, you went to prom with a date, right? Like, that was the thing. Like, you go to prom with a date or you don't go at all.
Yeah, if you didn't have a date, you could not go to prom. They did not sell single tickets.
But, like, even in 2013, people go to prom as friends all the time.
Yeah, they go in a group, they go by themselves, they go with a platonic friend, or, you know.
Like, Carrie, like, Sue and Tommy could have just invited Carrie to come with them.
Yeah.
And then they would have been a polycule like it was always meant to be.
Exactly.
Anyway. But, yeah, that's I can suspend my disbelief, but also I do clock that right away because I did go to prom with a date, but my original plan was to not go with a date because when I started high school, I wasn't dating anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is weird when you see that bit of Sue sitting at home with her family like, oh, guess I can't go to prom. Like, you can, though.
Yeah, girl. Sue. You can, girl. Hey.
You can just go.
Go hang out with your boyfriend and future girlfriend anyway.
And Carrie also.
It's like
one change that I really enjoyed in this movie is that in the book and in the original Brian De Palma movie, there's a scene where Tommy Ross reads a poem in front of the class that he wrote, and Carrie gets kind of picked on by the teacher for saying that it's beautiful, and it's a weird scene.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, I think, makes it make more sense by having Carrie be the one to read, not a poem she wrote, but one that she picked out that's, like, very creepy and very religious, and the kids are snickering at her about it, and the teacher is even getting in on it, and it's so... Everyone's had a teacher like that. The teacher who allies themselves with the popular kids.
Oh, I sure did. Fuck my high school math teacher who did that.
Yeah, like everybody has had that experience if they went to high school. Like, there's always that fucking teacher who's like, yeah, I'm one of the cool kids. I'm going to pick on the weird kids with the popular people. And
it's like, you're 40 years old.
Yeah, it's like, dude, come on, man. Get over yourself. And
I'll do you one better. I had a whole situation exactly like that when I was a kid. And when I was in middle school, I wasn't in high school. And it was actually a poem that, like, I wrote, because we had to do this whole thing about, like, our names and making our names into a poem. Like, oh, my name is da 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 da. And I picked some, like, really spooky gothic imagery without even really thinking about it, because that's just how I fucking was.
And you're valid for that.
And I read it in front of the class, and I didn't think anything of it. And then, like, one of my friends came to me yesterday, like, the next, like, at some point, like, after that, was like, Jemmy, you really freaked everyone out with that. You kind of said some scary things. I was like, did I? It was just, like, some nice imagery. Like, what are you talking about?
That's really funny.
So, yeah. That was my life. And, like, watching it this time, I'm like, oh, yep, been there, done that.
Been there. That was me. She's just like you for real.
She's just like me for real.
We have to talk about the kills in this movie because, oh, the prom scene is so good.
Okay, before we talk about the kills and how good they are, I do want to just say the CGI in this movie is atrocious.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad, it's bad, bad.
Atrocious. And it's like... Bad. It's like, I get that this was, like, 2013 and we were still kind of, like, experimenting with CGI, but, like, I'm sorry, you couldn't have put some things on strings. Like, just fucking put some fishing wire on a book. Like, everything that Carrie uses her powers on, unless it's, like, another person, and then you can tell it's, like, someone on wires. Like, all the fucking objects she moves are just, like, the worst CGI you've ever seen in your life. And I only clocked it this go-around. I was like, this looks terrible.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. However.
Actually, just last... The worst visual in this movie, by far, is Carrie fucking flying off the stage.
No, I liked that. That was fun. Sorry,
I think it's a little much.
That was cool.
I'm sorry, Taylor. I think it's a little much.
I get it, but I liked it. Okay. Oh,
I just hear defying gravity in the back of my head.
Oh, you're valid for that. But, like, also,
you're valid for thinking it's cool.
I liked it. I think it's a cool beat.
Anyway.
I want to talk about how fucking inventive the murders in this movie are, because they're so cool.
Oh my god, they're so... I get fucked up watching that scene where, like, the two twin girls get trampled every time.
They get fucking trampled! It's, I remember seeing that in theaters up. And being like, holy fucking shit.
It's so fucked up. Yeah, and then, like, the girl whose dress catches on fire, which I believe was a practical pyro effect. Very cool.
Interesting. I mean, listen, at least nobody had permanent hearing damage on the set of this film, which is more than I can say for the prom scene and the Brian De Palma one. But I will say, the other thing that I loved was the like, pull-out stairs, or, like, the whatever bleachers. They're called, the risers.
Bleachers. We had bleachers like that in my high school gymnasium, and every time I guess I can't say every time I saw them, because this came out after I graduated high school, but that was my first thought I was like, oh God, we have bleachers like that.
Yeah.
That like fold in.
Yeah. And one guy like falls between the bleachers and then Carrie shuts them and he's fucking spitting blood out of his mouth. Oh,
it's so nasty.
It's a great kill. Like that's the worst thing about this movie is that conceptually the kills are so awesome and a lot of them look like shit.
Yeah. Like
it's so sad.
The use of the wires to like fucking like whip Tina or whatever her name was. The same girl.
Oh, so good. When the water is all over the floor and then you see her detach the electrical wires and they start fucking whipping people with them.
Oh, looks terrible, but looks conceptually, bad. Conceptually, chef's kiss.
Yeah, literally. This movie just, I don't know if the CGI artists needed more time or more money or what, but whatever they needed, they should have had it because,
yeah,
like conceptually, so good, the kills. So fucking good.
Visually, shit garbage.
Yeah, bad to look at. Also, shout out to Chris and Billy's deaths.
Yeah, oh my God.
Which, that fucked me up when I saw this in theaters. Like, oh Chris God. With her face through
full
the windshield.
Of glass, yeah. Ugh,
oh,
gnarly.
With fucking shards of glass embedded in her face.
Gnarly.
And then fucking Carrie gnarly. Just throws the car into the gas station.
Fucking gnarly.
That actually, you know, compared to the rest of the CGI in this movie, that effect looked fucking great. Because it was practical. The glass. Yeah, like, the glass windshield thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that was makeup.
Yeah, and it looks great. But speaking of Chris and Billy, I do want to say one thing about this movie.
Please do.
Which is that Chris's fashion sense.
Portia Doubleday, first off, is rocking the worst spray tan you've ever seen in your life.
I get that it was intentional. I get that the spray tan is supposed to look bad, but it's the worst spray tan.
Oh my God. And oh boy, this movie, the fashion in this movie, the 2010s fashion, took me back in like the worst way possible.
So I want to give a shout out to one outfit, and I know you know what outfit I'm talking about.
I do.
It's the fucking blue skirt, black top, silver sparkly vest. High, by the way, pay less pumps. Like, high heels, but like work shoes. Like, professional pumps. Oh, like, business God. Casual pumps.
Oh, it's
so awful.
So bad.
It's really bad.
That's the one when she's like in the office talking to like with her dad, right?
Yeah. And then when she goes and confronts Sue in the gym afterwards. When that's when you see the fucking pay less pumps, the like the fucking black church high heels that she's got on. Oh, it's a mess of an outfit.
Vomit inducing.
It's really bad. But the thing that made me insane was I was like, listen, if this movie took place in, like, New Jersey,
she's fitting right in.
She would fit in. That's not how a popular girl in Maine would ever dress. She'd be like J. Crew.
Listen.
She'd be in a polo shirt and a tennis skirt, and you fucking know it. Like,
this movie has so much going for it. I can't bring myself to believe that it takes place in Maine.
No, it doesn't.
Like, Chris is like rocking Snooki from the Jersey Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and her outfit is so Snooki. Her whole vibe is so Snooki.
It's very Snooki. I even made a note. I'm like, oh, she's got like such a Snooki look going on. It's
she's got a bump it in her hair. She for sure has a bump it. Do you guys remember bump it? Do you guys remember those infomercials?
I remember those.
She has a bump it in her hair.
was Jersey Shore still like a thing in 2013?
I think so, because I remember being in middle school and it being a thing, and this came out when I was a freshman in high school, so.
Okay.
I think Jersey Shore was still on the air.
Yeah, it was still a thing when I was in high school, so, and I remember, because like, I remember my Italian teacher would talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
So it was still a thing, if it was still a thing when I was in high school, then it probably was still a thing in 2013.
Like, the rest of the outfits are like, fine, like, serviceable, like, boring 2010s. Ass 2010s teen fashion, but that fucking
that outfit,
blue skirt, payless pumps, silver sparkly vest.
Bad. So bad.
So bad.
While we're talking about the overwhelming 2010s vibe of this movie, the score of this, when it's not being like a horror movie, is like peak like 2010s indie acoustic shit.
Yes. It's the fucking Vampire Weekend needle drop at the end on Carrie's grave. Oh, it's so 2013.
And then also the whole prom, like all the fairy lights everywhere and the celestial lanterns. I'm like, yeah, this is 2020. This is 2013 all over. This is galaxy leggings. This is like, yeah. This is fairy lights in your bedroom, which I do still have.
it's so like indie hipster Tumblr. Like it's very that, like, I don't know a good way to segue into this, but one thing that I was laughing my ass off about with this movie is that, like, because in the Brian De Palma version, like, you never see Billy at the school, but, like, I don't know. He could just go to a different school, you know? Like, or he could be a dropout or something. This movie makes it very clear that he is one of those creepy 23-year-old guys who hangs out around the high school.
Yep. Which, like, truer to his character in the book.
Yeah. Like, you know, I feel like maybe he was supposed to be that in the 70s one, but it's never really made clear. Like, it's only really that you never see him at the school. But, like, no, this movie, he's for sure, like, just, like, a creepy guy in his 20s who is dating a high schooler. Oh, man. That actor... the perfect actor to cast in that role.
Oh, he's so, like, he's terrible. But
Billy Nolan in the year 2013 is this guy. Like, it's just this guy.
He's just horrible.
Yeah. I couldn't think of a way to segue into that, but I needed to say it. Like, perfect. Like, Kimberly Pierce gets it.
Yeah, she
understands. Another reason why this movie being directed by a woman, like, it's the little things. Like, Yeah, everyone knew the girl at your school who was dating a guy in his 20s.
Yep.
And you didn't really think about it when you were in high school, and now as an adult, you're like, huh, that was a predator.
Yep, that...
that guy was a sex creep.
Hey, that was a sex pervert. Cool.
Yeah, that guy. Billy Nolan is that guy. Oh god. Oh, Ansel Elgort in this movie... I don't want to give him props for anything because this isn't him, it's the screenwriting. But by the way, unequivocally, this podcast says fuck Ansel Elgort. All my homies hate Ansel Elgort. This is an anti Ansel Elgort podcast. We don't support fucking creep weirdos on our podcast. We don't like him. We don't like him.
We don't like him.
But in terms of the way that Tommy Ross is written in the script, I love that he's so stupid.
He's so stupid and he's so stupid. He's so stupid and he's so sweet and I do love him.
He's so endearingly stupid too. Like the bit when he is initially trying to ask Carrie out to prom and he starts telling this random ass story where he's just like, yo, and then me and the boys were doing this, right?
We hypnotized my boy's dog.
And then he looks at her like he expects her to be, like, into it, and she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's so good. And then also, at the prom, when the guy with the fucking video camera is going around recording people, and he's like, yo, this is a shout-out to my boys, and he starts, like, listing
off. Like Matt, Brian, and Brad, yeah.
He's so good. Oh, he's so stupid. He's so dumb. And, like, Sue is clearly, like, a very smart person. She clearly has a good head on her shoulders, despite Gabrielle Wilde's acting being shaky at times.
And her boyfriend is just the stupidest man you've ever met. And I love him so much.
Her boyfriend is so dumb.
I have to say...
That dynamic is very good.
Yeah. I have to say, there was a version of this movie where Tommy and Carrie kiss at the prom, and I'm glad they cut that. I think that's just a layer we didn't need.
I always forget that happens in the 70s one, because like, it feels so fucking out of place.
It's just like, weird. What? It's Hold just on. Weird.
What? Wait, we're kissing now?
It's weird. Also, though, they should have been able to be a polycule.
That's true. I have nothing more to say other than that's just true. That's true. You're correct for that.
I know. One more thing, really quick. I think we can end here. I love the way this movie portrays teenagers texting, because it's clearly, like, people who are much older trying to, like, I have it in my notes, like, all's well, she's great, miss you. Like, that's not a text from a teenager. That's a text from my dad.
They text like they're sending a telegram. All good, stop. See you, stop. And, like, teen movies always do this shit, and it's just, it's always really funny. Like, adults don't know how texting works.
One day, we will get to Wish Upon, and that will be a great day.
The pinnacle of, like, that genre of just not understanding teenagers at all.
Ultimate smegma.
This movie understands teenagers a little more than Wish Upon does. Mm-hmm.
Which is not saying much.
No, because Wish Upon doesn't understand teenagers. It may as well have been written by aliens.
All right. That's all I have. I mean, I say that's all I have. I could talk about this movie for another hour, but we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm. So I have sad news for everybody who likes this podcast. I only found a few Letterboxd reviews because most of them were just people talking about how bad this movie was.
Because they suck and they don't have taste.
And even then, a lot of the funny reviews are low star ratings, but they just said something funny. So I forgive them.
Listen, we are here to defend this movie where no one else will.
Mm-hmm. We really are this movie's sole cheerleaders.
I am the number one defender of this movie.
And you know what? I'm not going to pretend that there's not bad stuff in it. No. But fuck, I love this movie. Anyway, let's do some Live, Laugh, Letterboxd, which is a segment on this podcast where I read funny Letterboxd reviews because I love to laugh and I love jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Our first review comes from Mia, who says, Carrie literally kills her mom, then drags her entire house underground and nobody calls for help. Shitty neighbors. 3.5 stars.
Neighbors just looking out the window like, you know what? That's not my business.
Yeah. Mila says, can somebody please tell me if you can actually die via falling bucket? Like, is that possible? 2.5 stars. We didn't talk about the bucket.
We did not talk about the bucket. The answer is no, though.
I just would like to briefly say, this is one of those things where, like, again, we talked about this earlier in this episode. Stephen King has a way of writing that makes you overlook stupid things. And then when you see the stupid thing on the big screen being acted out by humans, you're like, that was dumb. And it's a fucking travesty that no Carrie adaptation has had the goddamn nerve to make Tommy Ross die in literally any other way than a bucket falling on his head.
I have a question.
Yes.
Tommy has to die before prom night starts happening, right? Before
yeah, because it's like the thing that pushes Carrie over the edge.
How would you do it?
That's a good question. I think it's got to be something that is not, that is, like, directly tied to the prank in some way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the only other way, it's equally stupid. Like, maybe he steps forward and slips on the blood.
That's the thing. I guess there's really no other way you can do it. But, like, someone smarter than me has to figure out a way to do it.
I know in the musical, they just have him die with everyone else, which I guess is better.
That's really funny because when I was in the musical, not the time that my sister played Carrie, I was in another Carrie the musical. I actually played the gym teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the bucket thing. But the way that they did it was that when we did the blackout so that Carrie could, like, quick change into the blood dress, the lights came up and Tommy was just on the ground with the bucket on his head.
That's so funny. I forgot how they did it in Jamie's production. I know how they did, like, the blood. I know they had, like, a bucket full of, like, streamers or something to, like, simulate the fall. Like, they blacked out, but it was backlit, so it was, like, silhouette. Yeah. You saw the silhouette of, like, the bucket tip over and the streamers come out and, like, on stage everyone would like gather around Jamie and someone would run out with like fake blood and just like smear it all over him. Oh, including man. On the, like, they had to wash that fucking dress every night to get the blood out.
Yeah, no, we had two separate dresses and a separate blood wig.
Yeah, and so...
Yeah, so we had two copies of the same wig, one of which was covered in blood, and two of the same dress, one of which was covered in blood. Anyway, I vividly remember being in Carrie the Musical, and the fucking blackout, lights come up, Tommy on the ground, bucket over his head. I just remember being like,
that's so fucking
really
funny.
Dumb.
So fucking funny. I think we just kind of slid, like, I think they just kind of swept Tommy under the rug and were like, yeah, he just died with everyone else.
I mean, I guess you could just have him die with everyone else at prom. But, like, I think I don't know.
In the book, I will say, it doesn't outright kill him. It just, like, knocks him out and he just dies, like, because he's there and, like,
yeah, because the school gets set on fire.
Yeah.
So he just, like, dies of smoke inhalation later on. I don't, whatever.
Whatever.
Fucking the bucket. I just.
You can't get rid of it.
It's so stupid.
It's so stupid, but you can't get rid of it because every other option is equally stupid.
Yeah, whatever. Ironically named Chris says, still waiting on that extended director's cut that I signed a petition for 6 years ago. 4 stars. Do you remember this shit?
I don't.
This fucking director's cut shit that the petition was going around? Fucking. Ugh.
Hang on.
All these deleted scenes that, you know.
I mean, I saw, like, I've seen the deleted scenes from this movie.
I've also seen the deleted scenes, but, like, apparently there was, a director's cut. I remember this petition floating
around.
Oh,
I'm looking at it right now on Google. Oh, my God. From, like, 2015.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. That was a moment in time. That was an era.
I wonder if we would have seen... like, the actual destruction of the town. Because I know a lot of, like, every production of Carrie, or every, like, version of Carrie cuts that, just because I imagine it would be, like, a huge CGI thing. So I wonder exactly...
She does at least get to wreck that gas station and, like, the street next to the school in this version.
Yeah.
Which is fun. Haley says, my favorite part is when the bucket took out Ansel Elgort. 3 stars. Oh, fuck Ansel Elgort.
You just love that bucket, huh, Taylor?
It's really funny. Liz says, still don't understand why Sue didn't just ask Carrie to the prom herself. They could have been prom queens. 3 stars.
So fucking true.
I agree. Danny says... she didn't look weird enough. They just made Chloe Grace Moretz look like a girl who listens to Mitski. 2 stars.
Do you think modern day... you know, though, modern day Carrie wouldn't be allowed to listen to Mitski, but, like, spiritually.
So, in the TV movie version that Brian Fuller did in, like, 2002, she sneaks, like, teen magazines into the prayer closet.
Queen.
So, like, I think maybe she secretly has, like, a secret little MP3 player full of Mitski songs.
Can I just say something really quick about the prayer closet that I wanted to bring up? In the book, there's, like, this big, scary fucking painting of, like, people languishing in hell in the closet. And I've always wanted to see that on screen. Like, the De Palma version didn't have it. This version didn't have it. I want to see sinners at the hands of an angry god, and no one has given it to me yet.
You know, in, like, 30 years, someone's gonna remake Carrie, and you're gonna, like, send them a letter, like, a threatening letter being like, hey, put that freaky ass painting in your movie.
Put that scary painting in there.
Joe says, she's literally neurodivergent and a minor. 2 stars.
Literally, she is neurodivergent and a minor.
And finally, Isaac says, and this might be the greatest review, Darth Carrie of the 7th Regiment of the Galactic Empire.
So fucking true.
I lost my shit when I saw that review.
Can I say something that you should cut out?
That would be a kick-ass AU. Fucking Carrie Star Wars, like, Sith
Hell yeah.
AU. Hell yeah.
Good for her.
That's all the Letterboxd reviews that I had. Like I said, slim pickings.
Slim pickings, because people don't understand good movies.
And art. Someone said this was camp. This isn't camp. The Brian De Palma one is camp.
The Brian De Palma one is, like, capital C camp.
Yeah, this is not camp. No, this is just a good movie.
This is just a good movie.
What is your star rating for Carrie 2013?
4 stars. Fuck you.
4 stars. Also, fuck you.
I'm not elaborating. 4 stars.
We just spent an hour elaborating.
I'm not elaborating here.
Yeah, this is a good movie. Argue with the wall.
Exactly. I am the wall, and I will not respond.
I'll fight about it.
You will not move me. You will not change me. This is a promise.
Stuck between a rock and a Jimmy.
This is a promise.
Yeah. God. Good movie.
Good movie.
If you haven't watched this movie in a while and your opinions on it were kind of the first time you watched it, but listening to this made you interested, I would very much encourage you to check it out, because you'd be surprised what good things you can find in this movie when you come at it from a perspective of looking at it as its own thing, rather than just being like, it's going to be a mid-remake.
You would be surprised at the fact that it's good.
I was surprised that it was good when I saw it in theaters, and I'm still surprised that it's good. It's good.
Just give it another chance. Just one. For us.
Yeah. This is my question to you. For your New Year's resolution, audience, should be to give Carrie 2013 a chance.
That's why we did this episode first in the new year. This is your resolution from us. Yeah. You can write that down for free.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next time, we will be watching another movie about prom.
I'm so excited.
A movie I've never seen before.
You're going to fucking see it. You're going to see this movie.
We'll be watching 1987's Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2.
It's not a sequel. It's not. It's just one of those movies where they called it Prom Night 2. It's a Troll 2 situation.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah,
It's a normal ass movie that they just were like, well, it's Canadian, and when we release it in America, we'll just call it Prom Night 2.
It's like American Psycho 2.
Yeah.
Where they just, like, shoehorn Patrick Bateman into this random ass movie.
They don't even do that in this movie. It's just the movie as written. They just call it Prom Night 2.
Amazing.
I have never seen the original Prom Night. I've seen this movie, like, twice, and it's... This movie is fucking camp, okay?
I'm very excited. Taylor has told me quite a bit about how insane this movie is, and I'm looking forward to a good campy time.
Oh, it's a terrible movie. I'm so excited for you to see it. And I won't tell you anything about it, because
I'm going into this completely cold.
Oh, this is going to be your Malignant, I feel.
I did Malignant to you. You're doing this to me.
Absolutely. 100% I am doing this to you. I'm inflicting this movie upon you. And audience, if you haven't seen it, oh, you're in for it.
All right. Well, until I have Prom Night 2 inflicted on me, you can follow us at FGFpod at Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. And if you liked what we did here today, you can give us those 4 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Do whatever it is you need to do on your podcast platform of choice to let us know that you enjoyed what we did here today. And we will see you next time for Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. Bye.
Bye, guys. Happy New Year.